First dub for the Marlins, their spring training campaign is off and running. Wins and losses do not matter. Performances, they do, for certain. Sean Barrett is in the house. We're going to dig into some of the early performances in the first three games. Small sample size it may be, but who's hot, who's not? All on today's Locked On Marlins.
You are Locked On Marlins, your daily podcast on the Miami Marlins. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings from England and welcome to Locked On Marlins. This is your daily Marlins podcast. I'm your host, Peter Pratt. Hit me up on Twitter at @MiamiMarlins_UK. Hit subscribe to the pod. It is your team every day. There is a YouTube channel. Head over to there. Hit subscribe there. Also, you will see Sean Barrett is in the house, the UK GOAT. It is Monday, of course. Sean, how are we doing, brother?
I'm doing well, Pete. We have officially got baseball games on the screen. It couldn't be a better time of year. Yeah. As you said, got the first dub in there, so we don't need to talk about being 0-3. So that's always a good thing.
Definitely is. Tonight's game, or this evening's game, this afternoon's game for the majority of listeners, because most people are based in the States that listen to this pod, caught me off guard. I didn't realize it was on TV. Only when I saw Fish Stripes talk about it, and they said, actually, no, the Astros broadcast a cover. And I was like, amazing. Didn't even know. So that was a real nice bonus. I think a 5 past 6 p.m. UK-friendly extravaganza. And Jesus Lazardo going. We're going to dig into the action that we saw today and some of the reaction from the first couple of games shortly. Before that, though, Sean, there's two topic areas I wanted to get your take on. Firstly, I wanted to get your view on the pitch clock specifically. It's been an interesting and divisive topic. So I'm interested to get your fan viewing experience thus far. The other topic area, and we'll start here, is there's two bits, two arms specifically. Sixto Sanchez. There was a Sixto Sanchez sighting today. Jordan McPherson, I think, had the clip. Maybe Noah, maybe Danny Alvarez. Maybe it was all of them. I don't know. Maybe they're all just there watching Sixto. But Sixto was seen throwing a baseball today. The catcher, I don't think, had full gear on, so it wasn't full gas from Sixto. Nevertheless, though, mate, you know, Sixto has been a big topic in the past month or so as we've seen him turn up looking slim, looking good, looking athletic. Just how good is it now to finally actually see Sixto throwing some baseballs as well?
You say it's been a big topic the last couple of weeks, months. It's been a big topic for the last couple of years, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has.
It's certainly dragged on. And for me, I hope this is the end of that saga. Obviously, the health of the shoulder is the main thing, but the fact that he's starting to ramp up now to full speed and there haven't been any setbacks as it stands. Obviously, the Marlins are going to take this super slow because anything that goes wrong now is going to, you know, it's going to cause an issue, and we could be talking about this next spring without ever having seen him again. So, yeah, for me, it's a case of hoping that this saga's at its end now and we can just focus on seeing him pitching out of probably the bullpen or getting some length down in AAA or AA, and then see where we are in June, July, because it's... I'm tired of talking Sixto and not actually seeing him perform. And that's a shame because I was so excited. I was so infused when he first came up to the majors and the possibility and the potential that he had that's kind of soured for me now. But let's give him one final chance, eh?
I think so. I think that's the problem, isn't it? It's just the way everything's kind of dragged on and the saga and kind of the way the Marlins were reporting it. It all just became a bit of a joke, to be honest with you, with this throwing from 22 and a half feet and whatever. So finally just back on the building, looking good, having fun, throwing a baseball. Let's hope it's just a natural progression from this point. And we see Sixto throwing some live game action at some point in the relative near term with no major setbacks. Let's carry on to another storyline that has been trending along the last week or so, 2 weeks, let's say, surrounding the Marlins in a potential six-man rotation. You know, maybe, maybe not. And I think maybe we're saying six-man rotation primarily because it feels like, according to Craig Mish and his view and his sense, I think is the language he used, is that Braxton Garrett's going to make this team. And that's going to mean that six starters are going to make this roster. And Sandy, it won't impact Sandy. And so Sandy's going to be going every fifth day, as he absolutely should be. And maybe the Marlins will try to mix and match starts, give a few days off. You know, because we have, I think the main thing we have to say about this rotation is there's not a lot of proven length in there in terms of innings. And so maybe this is the right approach, just kind of like six-man rotation, but apart from Sandy, just to try and give them that length and, you know, take the risk out of it, if you can put it that way. So what's your take on this? It sounds like it may be fluid, though, as well, where he may spend some time in the pen, may not. I can see where they're potentially going with it, but I also do think if they take Braxton out of, fully stretched out, then that leaves them a little bit exposed if things go wrong with one or two of the guys. And next thing is they're trying to, you know, draft in Brian Hoeing to make a spot start out of nowhere. And yeah, for me, that's not an optimal situation in a team that we'll be looking to press on this year.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's that case of having that sixth man rotation is all well and good, but you're still going to need a person that can give you some length out of the bullpen. So even though you're using your long man as a sixth starter, you're going to need another long man in the bullpen for those circumstances. Yeah. I think you're right in the sense that the Marlins haven't got a lot of proven length. You got Sandy. We know what we get from Sandy. I've spoken already about my concerns about the defense, the lack of the shift, and his ground ball profile. But I still have full faith that he'll be just what he was last year. Cueto, you know, he's not going to give you 200 innings, and he is getting, you know, it's another year on the arm, on the body.
Yeah.
And then with Lozado, Cabrera, and Rodgers, you've got three guys who are young, and they haven't completely proven that they can go 30 starts, six innings a start. So having that sixth man, give him an extra day rest, that will help them. And it will help the Marlins extend their innings through the year as well.
Mm.
If you know they're only going to go 160, 180, having them do that every sixth day means you're going to extend that through the season, which is always worth doing.
Yeah, I can certainly see it from that point. I just feel it leaves them a touch exposed if something goes wrong with one or two of the guys relatively early, like, you know, Trevor tweaks, or like Lozado last year, you know, an elbow impingement or whatever. Next thing is he's out for months. But let's say it was supposed to be like the, you know, a 2-3 week thing. You know, who is actually next man up then? Maybe it is the Braxton. They go back to a 5-man then, and Brax steps up, which makes sense. But the longer it goes into the year, and maybe the less frequent maybe Braxton Garrett starts are, or the shorter they are, then it's going to be tough to ask him to step up and try and, you know, throw 100 pitches all of a sudden. So I'm not sure. I mean, you know, I'm intrigued to see, but I'm equally slightly concerned. Like, I do like the insurance policy, and I think that's what Braxton Garrett kind of gives you, is an insurance policy at AAA. We've got a known guy that if something goes wrong, he's there ready to rock and roll. But as I mentioned on yesterday's show, yeah, for me, that kind of nods to the Marlins being pretty confident that Uri Perez, I think, has the ability to step up if they need him. I don't think they want him to, because when you have a potentially generational guy, you know, you start to get into the control discussions, and so they'll play that carefully, of course. But yeah, I think it's an intriguing situation, and I think it does also feed into what I want to talk about as well today in terms of what we've seen and some of the, you know, early guys that have flashed, and maybe one or two that haven't. Before we talk about that, though, Sean, talk to me about this pitch clock. How's the viewing experience been for you? These games have been brief, fast. Are you okay with the pitch clock, or have you got any concerns about it for, like, real regular season games?
I haven't got any concerns. The one thing that my major takeaway, which is probably strange and anti what the rule is the games are really short. Yeah. And it's not just, you know, the half an hour shorter games. It's the process of the game. Well, you know, you look down, as you know, we're all, you know, ADD on our phones and doing this, that, and the other. You look at your phone, you refresh Twitter, you go through your feed, you put out a tweet, and all of a sudden it's the end of the inning, and you're like, oh, yeah, I've missed everything.
Yeah.
So I think it's
so really true.
It's a completely different viewing experience. And I suppose that's kind of what they want. They want you to be engaged and have to focus on the game rather than... I like games when they're three and a half hours long, and you just you have it on in the background during the evening, you're playing around whatever, and once you get a couple of men on base, you're looking up, and that, and that's kind of, you know, when you're watching 162 games or close to that through a season, you have to keep yourself engaged with other things. But now these games are happening so thick and fast, the action's so compact. You know, it is a case of you could watch that quite happily as a solo event, and I guess that's kind of what they really wanted.
Yeah, you're right, mate. That's what's been happening. That's been my experience too. Like you, you know, you'll fire Twitter up in game, and that's, you know, part of the beauty of it for us that are remote fans, right? We're not sat around with a ton of Marlins fans here. We're in our houses on our own watching the games, and so Twitter's our way of engaging with, like, being sat next to people and having a conversation, or, you know, putting out an opinion on something. And doing that, you're pretty much missing two or three at bats by the time you've actually fired it up and typed out what you wanted to type. So you're right, it's definitely whistling along. I'm not against it at all. Like, I mean, but I, to your point, I do think our viewing approach will maybe have to change, and maybe this is more targeted about the in ballpark experience. But something I put out there earlier on was, you know, jokingly talking about the beer sales. But linked to that too, if you actually leave your seat in the ballpark to have to go to one of the concessions to go and get a hot dog or two and, you know, a couple of beers, next thing is you're going to miss three innings. It's going a little bit too quick. So it's going to be pressure on the clubs to have these concessions like fully manned. Like, you know, they have to be up to scratch here because people in the ballpark's going to be missing a lot of action. And I was jokingly saying that, you know, alcohol sales, they stop, seventh inning stretch, I think, or at the end of the seventh. That's coming at you fast. That's, you know, hour and a half in. There's only an hour and a half of beer time for baseball. What the hell? So I think they're going to need to look at that one. I don't know. Nevertheless, let's just do the first ad, and then we can dig into spring training impressions and who's kind of flashed. I think certainly some of the pitchers, there's been some really interesting performances. Most recently in this game, I think Smeltzer had a real nice one. So some of these long men battling actually are really flashing early on. But before we do that, reminder, this episode is brought to you by our good friends, our really good friends over at Built Bar. And if you're looking for that delicious treat but don't want all the fat and calories, then you've got to try these Builts. And they are, let's start right here, 100% real chocolate. They're covered in 100% real chocolate, and they've got unbelievable flavors. Churro, peanut butter brownie, coconut almond. I don't know how they do it, but these bars taste like candy bars while maintaining amazing macros. What's even better is they're healthy. Only 130 calories, 4 grams of sugar, and 17 grams of protein. Absolutely sensational. And you don't even have to wait around to get a box. No, no, no. You can still go to Built.com, but if you need it right now, which is possible, you can head to your local Walmart or Sam's Club. If you take it on the Walmart challenge, get to the pharmacy section and grab yourself a box of Builds, a 4-bar box, cookies and cream, double chocolate, or coconut puffs. If you're close to that Sam's Club, run in and grab a 13-bar box, all the hit flavors, brownie batter, and churro. Thank me later. Enjoy those Builds, baby. All right then, Sean. So the Marlins get their first dub of the year from a spring training perspective. 4-3 over the Astros. There were a few standout performances in this one. I won't bias you too much. I'll just kind of ask you straight up, mate, who was popping for you in this game? Who's kind of stood out in the first three, and who's trending in the right direction here as we're kind of getting into spring?
So for me, one of the main things about spring training, especially this early in spring training, is main guys getting their work in. Mm-hmm. And for me, seeing Lizardo come in, pitch a reasonably well 2 innings, and that was clearly where the Marlins were. You know, he wasn't laboring at any point. He could have gone a third. They clearly wanted him to go 2 innings and that be it for the day. I've seen a couple of other spring training games where you see a guy get lit up in the first inning or midway through the second inning, and the performance is irregardless. It doesn't matter. It really does not matter. But getting your innings in is the main thing for me. Getting your innings in, being healthy, I don't care about the results to a large degree. So for me, seeing Lizardo do that, perfect. Secondly, for me, Burgos, the guy that hasn't pitched in the major leagues in years. He's been down in Mexico playing an independent ball.
Yeah.
Gets a save opportunity.
There we go.
Gets the Marlins' first save opportunity. It's a spring training game, and it really doesn't matter. But I was kind of intrigued to see how they play it going into this save opportunity, just with one run in it. Again, it doesn't matter. But to see him come in, get two strikeouts, a guy that's going to be ultimately battling for a job role.
Yeah.
And for him to come in and lock that down, for me, that's as exciting as a spring training game can be.
Wow, wow, wow. Here we go. Here we go. We got the journeyman indie ball guy coming in for the save opportunity and locking it down with 2Ks. Love to see it. Jacob Berry, I think, also with a nice play at third base, would you believe? So there we go. There's another flashpoint. I would say for me, I mentioned on yesterday's pod, Dan Castano, I think, has certainly an opportunity to make the team. I know he was DFA'd, but it was, you know, there's two open spots right now on the 40-man, so there's a way the Marlins can clearly re-add him and add him. And I think he is battling for the long man role. There is a need for some relief help, clearly, in the pen. Obviously, Brazoban and his visa situation, I think, has potentially opened up a spot. So I think a nice start. Equally today, in today's game, first eyeballs on Devin Smeltzer. And I must say, it was pretty impressive from Smeltzer. He kind of grew into it. I'd say it was two innings of work. But the first inning, I think there was a walk, potentially a leadoff walk. But as he got that second inning in particular, it was bang, bang, bang. I think he finished off with a strikeout of Jose Altuve. So, you know, good finish for him. Terrible day for Altuve. Three at-bats, 3Ks. So not good for him. Altuve getting absolutely mowed down. But for me, some of these long men, very, very impressive start. We also had a debut from Matt Barnes. Gave up a home run, which I have no idea how it made it out, mate, to be honest with you. I mean, it looked like a routine fly, and next thing is, it somehow cleared the fences. But overall, Matt Barnes, my impression with him, and I'll get yours as well, it looked a touch erratic at times, I have to be honest. But the curveball definitely there, definitely plays. I think he might have struck out Jose Altuve as well, if I recall correctly. So Altuve get lit up. But Barnes, a touch erratic, still plenty of, you know, the curveball definitely plays, no doubt. But overall, like you said, mate, the pitching has probably been the highlight. It definitely has been the highlight because the last couple of days, the offense has not been amazing. But, you know, Smeltzer, thoughts on him in this this first outing?
Yeah, I mean, again, he's one of those guys that's going to be fighting out that long man position. And if it is a case that we're going to go with that six-man rotation, yeah, and with Brazoban, as you said, with his issues with his visa, there could be a situation where Castano and Smeltzer are battling it out for that role.
Yeah.
And, you know, they've both had experience, Castano, obviously, with the Marlins. So whether or not that gives them a leg up or not, or whether it is purely on a performance basis, will be interesting. I would say that it would be good for the Marlins to have both of them available, either at the major league level or in AAA.
Yeah.
So presumably or hopefully they both stay with the team. And there are jobs aplenty at the moment, or opportunity for these guys. And yeah, it's a case of let's see how they perform.
Definitely. Let's flick it over to the offensive side, mate. Standout has been, in my opinion, Peyton Burdick. As you know, home run today, opposite field oppo with a boppo there. Again, you know, we talked about it earlier. Balls were flying out, I think it felt a little bit today. It didn't feel like it was going to go for a home run, and then it just kind of traveled a distance as well. But Burdick, a 4 RBI day, I believe, today. Let me just check that out. No, 3 RBIs today, but 4 for him in spring thus far. So Burdick absolutely lighting up. I mean, with Peyton Burdick, it's a name that we haven't spoken about a ton, mate, to be honest with you, primarily because there's like he's seemingly a little bit blocked right now. And this kind of alludes to maybe the reason why the Marlins were so happy to move Blade, because, you know, potentially Blade was behind Burdick as well, and Burdick's blocked. But for him, you know, what's to say here that Burdick can't just kind of press home and have a stunning spring and make the team, because, that you know, we've got Jazz there in center field. We've got the two guys, Jesus and De La Cruz, battling it out. Soler's going to play some, Avi is. But I think if Burdick, there's a chance he could force his way onto this roster, I think. What about you?
I think he'd have to have a really hot spring.
Yeah.
And another guy would have to have quite a cold one for him to get an opportunity out from opening day. But yeah, you're right. We don't talk about him a lot. And it's not just us individually. I don't think he's seen like that from the organization either. So maybe a hot spring might not earn him a job in opening day, but it could open some eyes and make them realise, oh, this is someone now that we have to pay attention to. He could be the next man up if and when there's an injury. Yeah. So he can earn himself opportunities by having a hot spring. And yeah, I mean, that home run, I mean, that's a warning track fly ball anywhere else, I think, at the major league level. But
yeah,
it's good to see him put a swing on it. You know, as you said, with Jose Altuve striking out three times, seeing quite a lot of ground balls to the middle infielders. So for him to put a nice fly ball up in the air is always positive to see. The fact that it crept out is obviously neither here nor there, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing as well with Peyton Burdick, what we shouldn't forget, well, maybe we didn't notice this, but he started in center field in game one in spring. So, you know, again, there is potentially there's a center field play. There will always be that ripple now for the entire of spring, because, you know, Jazz can't play there every day. And, you know, first thoughts on Jazz there at center field, mate, yesterday. I mean, I think he only had one ball to play. He came out after and said, listen, I didn't think I was ever getting there. It looked like it was a broken bat play in the end from Arenado. So one of those broken bat situations. Listen, you play center field yourself, mate, as well. I don't know how many broken bat situations there are. But, you know, I think it's probably one of those where it's off the bat or initially, it probably looks like he's hit it harder. Then he realizes it's broken bat and the step was backwards. Probably should have been forwards. Well, definitely should have been forwards. The opportunity's lost, and then he's end up in defensive mode, I think, there, right? Letting the ball bounce and play it and get a good throw in. So, you know, was I guess he was saying that he was trying to deke the runner. But overall, I think it was a misplay there for Jazz in center field, right?
Yeah, I think so. To say that I play center field at the level that I play at is significantly different. But it is a case of, or at least how I feel when I'm in the field, it is a case of I don't want to make a move until I know I can read the ball.
Yeah.
Because if I take a step back and I need to go forwards, I've need to then take two steps to get to where I need to be.
Yep.
And so your first step, if you're not sure, should be no step.
Yeah.
And Jazz, as soon as the crack of the bat, he was moving backwards.
Yeah.
That, to me, you have to be a really, really experienced center fielder or outfielder to know off the crack of the bat where that's going.
Definitely.
I've spoken to experienced players and they talk about hearing the ball and knowing exactly where it's going, which to me is crazy.
Yeah, that is.
And Jazz misread the ball. Whether or not, however he wants to word what he worded afterwards,
mm-hmm.
on the crack of the bat, he moved backwards when he should have gone forwards, and that's a mistake. Will that come with experience? You hope so.
Mm-hmm.
But his first opportunity to go like that, and it wasn't just him. We saw miscues from Arias and from Segura.
Yep.
And it is a case of our worst, that inning was our worst case scenario happening. And it is a good start.
I'm with you on that. However, on the flip side, I think it's the best possible situation for the Marlins for it to happen in game two of spring. Because you don't want to lull yourself into a false sense of security here. I think it's a perfect time for all three of those guys that are being asked to do things that maybe they don't want to be, to have these issues. And for Jazz, there's a clear thing. There's something to work on straight away. And they can, you know, it is. It's just instinctive. That situation is, you hear it, his immediate reaction was backwards. And if that, listen, I've never played center field, but if that's what you shouldn't be doing, then he's got a great, you know, live, he's got something on tape there where he's done something incorrectly and it's about working on that to get better. Because in a month's time, it's really going to matter. So I'm pleased that it's happening now. Ideally, it's all looking perfect and it's all looking sexy. And we're like, hey, this is amazing. You know, Kim's pulled an absolute blinder. But the reality is we know there's going to be growing pains. And I want there to be growing pains early. So there's no one's in a false sense. And we're all clear on what the guys need to work on. And they'll continue to kind of press to get better. And it is what it is. So, you know, game two of spring, first game out for those guys. The defense, you know, it's going to be another wrinkle. It's going to be another storyline all through the year for the Marlins, particularly through these spring games anyway. You know, Jazz in center field, it's one of the biggest storylines in Major League Baseball. It's definitely the biggest storyline for the Marlins. So, yeah, overall, there's been, you know, I think De La Cruz has had a nice start too. We talked about Burdick, but for De La Cruz, definitely had a nice start. Jesus Sanchez as well is, looking slightly more controlled, I would say, just about. And what you would say with Jesus Sanchez is, like, it's clear, like, the difference in the shift is very obvious, I would say. And you do kind of look at that and think, you can see these lefty pull guys just getting a ton more hits. Like, you can just see it, that it's going to be happening. And I think in yesterday's game with the Cardinals, there was just, like, hits flying everywhere. I think 16 hits for the Cardinals. Not to say it was all shift-related, mate, but you can just see it. There's just going to be more action, more hits in the game, and it's about putting the ball in play. So on the flip side with the defense, I do think the Marlins and Kim, I think they have gone down a pathway which could lead to some success this year, because balls in play, you know, traffic on the bases, I think there's, you know, a decent way that's going to accumulate some runs this year. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, it is a case of the Marlins had to do something with the offense. They couldn't continue with the way that the lineup was set. And they've made a clear improvement in the offense at the cost of some defense. The defense, mm-hmm. I think, once it all pans out, and as you said, first couple of days in spring, just you can't make a read on that so early. They will get better. The team is going to be offensively better. There'll be a few miscues through the season defensively, I think. We're not going to see, you know, we kind of got used to seeing Rojas at shortstop. BA at third base was a fantastic third baseman for years.
Yep.
I don't think we're going to see that level of defense even after 6 months of experience from these guys. But the offense, if it's there, will carry the team further, especially with the pitching. We know the pitching's there, and it is a case of this team should perform far better than the teams we've seen for a while.
Yeah. Yeah, agreed. You know, we've been lulled into a false sense of security. Like, our eyeballs have adjusted to Miguel Rojas and Brian Anderson, and Brian Anderson of, you know, the earlier part of his Marlins career in particular. Like, elite stuff there, and it's just not what we're going to see anymore. And it's just about how much of an impact that has in terms of wins and losses. And, you know, and there's going to be times when, you know, there's going to be a misplay and it's going to be a big one. It's going to lead to a loss. And so we're going to, you know, like last year, pointed to things, well, the blown saves. In the early part of the year, it's going to be, is there an error? Or is there a big field in play that effectively becomes a blown save? So that's going to be the really interesting storyline here, I think. But overall as well, one guy I wanted to quickly call out that, it was in today's game, but Nick Fortes, I would say, in the batter's box, was looking really nice. I thought, you know, he had a single and a walk, but his at-bats looked good. He looked strong. For me, Nick Fortes has got every opportunity to have a real nice year this year, I think. We saw plenty of flash of it last year. It's really early in spring, clearly. But for me, Nick Fortes, the swing looks nice. It looks compact. It looks powerful. If I squint a touch, and I'm really squinting here, there is some element of Austin Riley I can see there in that swing. So, I mean, that's a bit of a leap, but for those who are listening, go and have a look and see if you can see where I'm going with that one. But yeah, for me, Nicky Fortes, you know, we know he's going to be making the roster. We know he's going to be splitting time with Jacob Stallings, and he's going to have, you know, every opportunity to perform, I'd say, here. Anyone else, Sean, that's kind of stood out to you, or, you know, negatively or positively in the, you know, the last minute or two here, and then we'll get out of here?
I think for me, it's too early. I think it is a case of, we've seen a couple of games, and for me, I'll echo what I said earlier. It is a case of, for me, the results don't matter. The health matters, getting the time in. It is a case of, we've had three games and we haven't really seen a lot of anybody because there's so many people in spring training.
Yeah.
And I think it is a case of, we've just got to let, you know, the games play out and see where we get. One thing I would say is, actually, now I'm thinking about it, Groshans. A couple of hits from Groshans.
Yep.
I think with the defense as it is, I think he could be key, because when he plays, he's going to play third base. He plays defensively okay at third base. That moves Segura into second base. If you need it, that puts Arias into first. That gives Cooper Day off or on DH. I think Groshans, if he can hit, you know, for moderate power, 10 to 15 home runs with a 270-plus batting average, playing decent third base, that would be absolutely key for the Marlins to be able to move people around, put them where they really should be playing. So yeah. To see him get a couple of knocks early in spring, actually, it's quite encouraging.
Yeah, no, I agree. Actually, had a nice game today, Jordan Groshans. Just on first base, let's just wrap up here. So you know, your favorite topic area, clearly, but the DH situation, I talked about on yesterday's episode. The sense was perhaps, or the view we had as Marlins fans was that would be Jorge Soler's role. And when I kind of look back and reflect on that, no one's actually ever said that from the Marlins. So that was just the you know, we created that idea or concept. I am wondering, you know, Jorge Soler straight out there in left field yesterday for the game. I am wondering if maybe Cooper Loop ends up actually spending a bit more time in the DH spot than maybe we're thinking about, because, you know, maybe of the obvious lack of first baseman, but overall, Arraez is an obvious first base candidate, and maybe Coop ends up actually spending a bit more time in the DH role than maybe we'd anticipate. That's not a bad thing for Coop. We talked about it last year heading into the year. DH is great for Coop. Keeps him trying to, you know, he's looking after himself, because when he's healthy, he's dangerous. So I don't know. What's your thoughts on that, with Coop DHing a little bit more frequently?
Yeah, I mean, it's a case we spoke last year about the idea that Coop would DH more than he would play first base. That didn't end up happening. He played more at first base. His splits across playing at first and playing DH are pretty much identical. There's no issue for him doing both. I think, yeah, you're right in the case of, we've talked about this, I think, probably off air, to sort of like look behind the curtain a little bit. We spend probably more time talking before that we record and after we record than we do record. And sometimes that conversation is quite interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they've come out and said that he's going to play probably in the field quite a bit, which is interesting.
Yeah.
He'll be in the corners, obviously, in left field, I would hope. And, yeah, so it is a case of they've got a lot of depth in the sense of players at the moment are playing out of position. Again, so left field probably is him playing out of position. But that would give the team an opportunity to play people or more people in their normal positions.
Yeah.
So I think there's going to be a lot of moving parts in this lineup. It's going to be a case of you're going to rarely see the same lineup every day.
Yeah.
And that's not the same guys, the same position that they're playing, same batting lineup. I think it could be mix and match. It could be lefty, righties. I think the Marlins have built a batting lineup that enables them to play to the advantages. And so it'll be really interesting to see how deep they go into that. We're so used to seeing Donnie just set a lineup that he wants, and it's his opinion. There could be a more consensus idea of where can we take advantage of the numbers of the players that we've got.
Yeah.
So for me, it could be quite interesting.
Yeah, agreed. All right, well, let's wrap things up there. Looking ahead to tomorrow, the Marlins are heading to play against the Red Sox. Trevor Rogers making his spring training debut. It could be a day of lefties, though, mate, because we haven't seen any of Tanner Scott yet either, or AJ Puck. So I'm do wondering if both Scott, Puck, and Trevor Rogers all going tomorrow, I think, which is there's a decent probability of that. So that should be very exciting to see. I'm very, very excited to see AJ Puck live, having never, I don't think, ever watched him pitch before. So that should be a lot of fun. And I'm very intrigued to see what Tanner Scott looks like as well. Should be fun. Likelihood is we probably see a little bit similar to the guys that were out in game two. So maybe another Jazz Chisholm center field experience. So we'll look forward to that. And hopefully we just get some nice plays under his belt. I think the tricky thing for him was he basically had one ball to play, misplayed it. So the ratios aren't great. You know, we just need a couple of routine flies and everything looks hunky-dory and we just forget about this for now. But guys, thanks for making Locked On Marlins your first listen of the day. If you're thinking about your second listen of the day, I'd recommend, and it's that time of the year too, guys, I'd recommend you go and check out Locked On Fantasy Baseball. You can win your league by listening to Matt and Dom every day as they bring you the best fantasy draft strategies. You can find Locked On Fantasy Baseball wherever you get your podcasts and on YouTube, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, and it's your team every day. That's going to wrap us up on Locked On Marlins. Thanks to the UK GOAT, Sean Barrett, and we'll be back very, very soon, probably in all likelihood tomorrow, digging into what we've seen from Trevor Rogers and the boys against the Red Sox. See you then.